Welcome to Career Tools, the Manager Tools Work Management Spreadsheet, part 2 of 3. Here we go. Folks, this is a reminder from last week. This podcast answers these questions. What is the Manager Tools Work Management Spreadsheet? How would you use it? When would you use it? And how can you handle projects effectively without using full-blown project management software, which is really too big a hammer? But it's more than just writing things down on a list.
Sadly, one of the results we know will come out of the COVID-19 crisis is that people will be laid off. In fact, people are already being laid off. People like you and the people you know. As well as our Frugal Living podcast from last week, we have a lot of podcasts about surviving layoffs for managers and professionals. If you go to the website and search layoffs in the search bar, you'll find all of them. And as well as listening for yourself, please forward that link to everyone you know. Not because we need the marketing, though we suck at marketing, but because we want to help as many people as possible. And that's one way you can help us achieve that.
Okay, Wendy. So briefly, can you give us at a high level what we talked about last week?
Yeah. So we talked about what the work management spreadsheet is. The example of the one that we use, which we call Cypress, which is how we track our conference and client conferences and public conferences deliveries and all of the tasks that go into those, which is like 100-ish per delivery. And we talked about why we don't use project management software, why we use Google Sheets. So all of the kind of the reasoning for having this system rather than any other system that people might think would be a good one for the same kind of work.
Yeah. And we also, I think, gave some examples. Onboarding would be a good example. Didn't we talk about onboarding last week?
Yes, we did. We had a bunch of examples of places where you might use this.
Yeah. Yeah. Hiring. Right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, hiring.
Shoot. Yeah. Okay, good. All right. So let's make one. Let's make a work management spreadsheet because we've already wasted their week telling them why, and we haven't told them how, which is the Manager Tools brand, which is telling people what to do and how to do it. And to help everybody get used to this, we have an image that you can look at that's free to download, not just to licensees, but to everybody, so that you can keep track of some of our guidance. It's available on the website associated with this particular podcast, and it labels the header data and task descriptions and so on. Some of you who work for spreadsheets all the time can picture the spreadsheet and can build it in your head. Most of us can't, so it might be helpful to see an example of it with templates and dates and project names and task numbers and the offset and who does what by when and so on. Okay, so the first step is to create that shell.
Right, and we're going to break creating the shell up into some extra steps. So we've got 3 steps to that thing.
And can you, okay, but let's be clear. What is the shell?
So the shell is the information that tells you what's in the spreadsheet. So things like a column that says task number that tells you that underneath that heading are all the task numbers, or a row title that says this is the task which is about shipping something via FedEx.
Sounds to me like what you're saying is the top few rows and the leftmost columns and the shell are the administrative and titular details of any given task or project and what you're going to do and when you're going to do it put into a spreadsheet format. And the rest of it, I think what you're saying is, so in other words, the shell is the left bit of the spreadsheet and the top bit. And it also includes the math, the logic by which various dates, due dates are computed. Does the shell also include the formatting changes that causes a cell from going to white to green to amber to red?
No, that's in the next section.
Okay, that's okay. Good. All right. So all we're doing right now is creating the key header data, if you will, for the top few columns in the spreadsheet and the leftmost I'm sorry, the top few rows and the leftmost columns. And we can assume 3 or 4 or 5 of each of those as a rough sort of placeholder for everything else. Okay, good.
And some of those will be the same for everybody, and some of them will be different for different projects, depending on what you're doing. But this data is the sort of scaffolding that you hang everything else off. So the first thing you need to do is decide on an orientation. And that is which order you put things in the spreadsheet, and whether you put them in a way that's going across from left to right or from top to bottom.
But let's be clear, you're talking about whether or not what you really mean is tasks, right?
Yes.
Are you going to have your tasks go from left to right? Because tasks in a project or in a string of tasks happen in order, and time generally flows in most modern graphical representations from left to right. And so a lot of people would say, I'm going to put my tasks across the top. And then each one of the projects or iterations of a project that they relate to will go down the left side. The other way to do it would be to say, okay, we're going to have every iteration of a project exist in a column, and the row of tasks in order will proceed not left to right, but down. Okay, good. Okay, so why do they have to decide?
Because when you've got all the data in, what you want is to have put them into the spreadsheet in a way that gives you some kind of at-a-glance information. So if you know that time flows, like you said, from left to right, and I know that my spreadsheet started in January and I'm looking for something in November, I know I have to scroll right to find that thing.
Yeah, but we're not recommending that tasks go across the top.
No. In part, for a bunch of reasons, but it's better if the tasks go top to bottom.
Because we've tried it both ways.
Yes.
Yeah. And the primary way, now I'm probably stealing your thunder here, but the primary reason why, guys, is because if your tasks, which might be, and I'll just read some from the example Cypress sheet we have, send recommendation to particular person, review proposal / room schematic from hotel, compare to others received, add conference to calendars, okay? Those are all tasks. The fundamental problem we had with tasks going left to right, which I understand some people think that way, is that tasks usually have a lot of words, and either you're going to orient the text in your cell across the top, and essentially that every column is a task, and the column to the right of the task you're looking at happens generally after yours, time flowing from left to right. You have a massively tall row at the top to put in all your tasks, and the orientation of your text is such that you have to turn your head to read them. And that just didn't work for us. We tried it and it didn't work. So time also does flow top to bottom in people's minds. They just have to get used to it. In fact, when people make to-do lists, that's the example I have in my head, the to-do list starts at the top and goes down. Okay, I'm sorry. I interrupted. Go ahead.
So you could have it either way, but if you have a lot of tasks and they're long, it's usually better to have them the way that we're going to describe. And like you said, tasks happen in a particular order and they're spaced out in time. So for example, if I had my to-do list for today, looking in the fridge to see what groceries I need would come before going to the store and buying those groceries, obviously.
Yeah, I will say this though. You've used that phrase a couple of times. You said tasks occur in a particular order. Don't get overly worried here, guys. Tasks generally occur in a general order, but that doesn't mean that you have to know exactly which task happens in exactly which order when you first start using this spreadsheet. You can actually put down a list of 50 tasks and guess, make a rough guess of whether that one should be day 45 or that one should be day 47. Whatever version of this spreadsheet that you create, the first one, is going to be changed at least 50% as you iterate. Now, you might say, well, that's not really a spreadsheet. We would say, well, we're using the spreadsheet's logic in order to represent human behavior. And human behavior on projects, if you think about keeping it all in your head, you're constantly learning and adjusting, and you'll want to reflect that in the spreadsheet. We typically, every couple of months, now our spreadsheet has 100 tasks and it's applied 100 different times each year. We typically, every couple of months, get input from the many people who use the spreadsheet to say, hey, this task really isn't accurate anymore. In fact, one of the most, I would say, common mistakes that we here at Manager Tools make that frustrates the devil out of me is, if you've listened to our previous guidance about tasks, there should be no and in a task. So when we say send a document or email RFP and room diagram to hotel requesting proposal, that's two different things. If you emailed the RFP but not the room diagram, you really can't mark that thing as done. And so we find all the time that we have to make it more granular so we can track individual tasks. Now, that may not be to your liking. You may find that because it's a single email, including two things, that that's not a problem. But there are plenty of other times when it says things like, find out if Mark is available, and then let Maggie know that he'll be the one doing the training. Well, those are two separate tasks, and if somebody finds out I'm available but then doesn't let Maggie know, the next step, which is Maggie telling the client, is can't be done because Maggie doesn't know. Okay, all right, sorry. Just trying to give some real-world examples there.
Yeah, that's a really important point. I didn't get to you till way later, but you won't get it right first time, so none of this, what we're going to say, presupposes that you know exactly what you're doing. You don't, and you are sure to get it wrong.
Look, guys, the purpose of this is not to create exactitude. It's to take your mind off thinking about the process, to take that part of your brain that's thinking, are we doing this right? What else needs to be done? What's next? I'm not sure. What happens next when I do this? What am I going to do next week? And so on. What could I get ahead on? And essentially allowing your memory, which is, of course, faulty, to drive the success of the project. We're just like a little pin sieve here. We're going to take out that process part, the task order part, a task status part, and we're going to put that in writing. And then we're going to change it an awful lot. And as I tell people all the time here at Manager Tools, these are our tools. We can change them however we want. Every once in a while, in fact, here we have people say, oh, that's not exactly how we said to do it in the podcast. I said, listen to the podcast again. The podcast doesn't say, except in very few cases, these are the only words you can use. These are the recommended words. These are the words that we have found work most effectively. Or here's our guidance in most situations. But perhaps in this particular situation, it's an exception. Don't not start because you think this is going to be a precision activity, because we don't think of it a precision activity. But I'll tell you what, when I open up Cypress every morning and look at the 10,000 tasks that are due over the course of a year, and of course, there's an area that I call the hot area in Cypress, which is the particular conferences that are being planned or client engagements that are being planned and the typical dates when things are due. And I can see whether things are green or amber or red, and I can find out where more resources need to be applied. And I find that out in 30 seconds without reading any reports, without calling people, without Slacking, without texting, without email. I know immediately. Anyway, where were we?
So as we go through to describe this, we will assume that for your tasks, that they will run from top to bottom of the spreadsheet. That means the start of the project is at the top of the spreadsheet after the header data, and the end of the project is at the bottom of the spreadsheet. In other words, the task done first in time will be on a low numbered row, 3, 4, 5. And then the last task in that project will be on a high number row, so 90, 100, 150, however many tasks you had. And that column in its entirety represents the whole project.
Yeah. And for many of you, maybe you have 20 or 30 tasks and you don't really think of it as a project. You just have a list of tasks. Well, we're just using the word project to save ourselves the vocabulary. But if I had 30 tasks that I had to do regularly, end of month closeout, mid-month setting up of a big conference call with 500 people and all the people I had to send special notes to, and I still had that written on a series of yellow stickies in my GoToMeeting notebook, I would create one of these. And I would know that on the 10th of the month, I have 13 tasks to accomplish. And I can say to my boss, go look. It'll tell you whether or not, hey, when they say to me, hey, Mark, how's the, you know, the conference going, the conference call, the teleconference going? I said, it's done. Or I've got one more thing to do. It's due tomorrow. We're green. Okay. Keep going, Wendy.
Okay. So once you've got your orientation, you've decided how you're going to set it up. And I would recommend the tasks top to bottom, at least in the beginning.
And to be clear, guys, we're not going to do it. We're not going to tell you the other way to do it. We're not going to tell you how to do it with tasks on the right. If you want to do it tasks left to right, we respect that. But you're going to have to do some mental spatial gymnastics to remember that every time we say above or below, you might have to assume left or right and vice versa.
The next thing we're going to do is add the information at the top of the spreadsheet, which allows us to identify which project we are looking at in each column. And we said before that start with one project, don't start with 30 projects. So initially, you might think you don't need this information because you know which project you're working on, but working through this is helpful in that you can then use it later when you decide to add more projects, which you will. And so the header data is the information on the first few rows that say this is this project rather than another one. And we're going to.
Can I just interject here something? I'm thinking about the listener right now and I'm thinking, okay, Mark and Wendy are describing this to me. Fine. Okay. When I add another project, it'll be a different column. That will only make sense if those projects are essentially similar, but perhaps separated by time or location. In other words, you couldn't put onboarding in one column with a set of its own tasks and then put hiring into the next column. That would have a different set of tasks. So when we talk about adding more projects to the right of an existing project, we're talking about a single page in a spreadsheet, and all of the projects that inhabit a single page of the spreadsheet all share an identical set of tasks.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Sorry. Okay.
Should have said that.
Yeah. No. Good. Okay.
So this information that we're going to use at the top of the spreadsheet, we're going to divide it into two parts, two types of information. The first is identification and the second is quick lookup. So if your identification data is that information that allows you to identify this project rather than another one. So in our case, it's a location and a month. So we know it's Silicon Valley in January or Silicon Valley in March or Silicon Valley in May. As a team, we only need those two pieces of information to know which public conference something is. So what we're going to put in, what you're going to put onto your spreadsheet is the identification data that helps you or your team understand this thing rather than this thing. And there's a few factors. We're going to give you some example factors. There's more, but hopefully this will help you think about how you identify projects. So we're going to give you project numbers, location, customer name, and time as examples. If you identify your projects by numbers, like ticket numbers on an IT system, a billing number, a code of some kind, an invoice number, an order number, a client number, there's all sorts of number things that companies use to identify things. If that number is sufficient, if you know that customer 40 is something that means something to you and your team, you can use that as one of your pieces of identification. Another is customer name. So many projects are delivered to customers, external or internal. And if Mike B is enough, use that. If you need the whole name, if you need the company name, it might be a department name, anything that you use, again, to identify particular projects.
Good. Okay, good.
Another suggestion, location. So a construction company might use the street name that a house is on. So there might be all the project that's happening on Creekshore Cove or Water Lily Way or whatever.
Or if you're doing an apartment building, that the construction company might use the unit numbers, exactly. Right? In every single unit, there are 85 tasks. And you want to know what the status is of unit 21. And you go look at unit 21, and they're slated to be done at different times. You know exactly where unit 21 is. Yeah. Right. Okay, good.
And location can be a house number, a street number, a suburb, a city, a country. It could be locations in a building.
Could be an office, a particular office building, like, Apple, Infinite Loop 1, 2, 3, 4, Microsoft, there were certain buildings, Fab 5. I'm pretty sure, as I recall, Intel was in Rio Rancho. And if somebody said Fab 5, everybody knew what they meant. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, good.
And the last one is time. You might have projects that happen in particular months or years. So you could use the name of the month or the year.
Monthly closeout? A training session? Monthly closeout?
Intern hiring for 2020.
Scheduling a recurring meeting that's somewhat more complex than sending out an email to 25 people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are just examples. If there's something else you use to identify projects, then use that. And if you need multiple pieces of information to identify a project, then use multiple rows to hold it. So for example, if you use the customer name, but Mike B isn't enough, then maybe your first few tasks would be enter the customer name, like first and last name, enter the customer department, and enter the company name. So that would be putting that information into the header data. If you need three pieces, if you need seven pieces of information to identify which one it is, that's what you need. So the other things that come under that identification data is more header data, but this is quick lookup information. So for some projects, you frequently need to know the same pieces of information. So in our case, whilst the location and the month is enough to identify a public conference, if I have a question about a task that a presenter is supposed to do, I need to know which presenter is doing that conference. And I can go to the Managed Tools delivery calendar, which has it on, or to make it easy for myself, we put it in the header data, and then I can see it right there.
Yeah. For instance, I get a series of emails which say in late February, early March of 2020, that we've had three cancellations, or actually, I guess we had deferrals to the Silicon Valley conference in March, which, if you don't know, we canceled due to shelter in place and business closing restrictions in California. Well, I want to know not just what the organization is doing and what our tasks are around that, but I want to know who the presenter is, because the people who are attending that conference, we announce who the presenter is. And I'm thinking it might be nice in this unusual time we're living in March of 2020, to have the presenter send an email to those folks and say, hey, saw that you deferred, no worries. Hope you're well, stay safe. We'll see you in July or September, whenever the next conference is. So that without the quick lookup data, I got to go back to another source. When in fact, this document, and I think of each column almost as a project document, should have some of that data there. When I want to know who's delivering Silicon Valley in March, I go here to Cypress and there it is. Okay, good.
So the next few tasks are going to be entering that data onto your spreadsheet. So for example, for us, it's enter presenter name. So we've got some more examples of data that you might have under the quick lookup. Again, it depends on your project, but one might be owner. So if there's one person managing the project, like a presenter.
Project manager, yeah.
Yeah, and it's different for every project, then you want a row for the project manager's name. It can be owned by a specific hiring manager or a contact, a customer. If the information is always the same, if you only have one project manager and the project manager is the same every time, then you don't need that. But it's for information that changes that you need frequently. Type is another one. So if you have different products or modes of delivery, then type becomes useful. So for example, onboarding, you could have a list of tasks for onboarding someone who's an internal transfer and a different list for external hire. But those two lists are similar enough that you want to keep them on one project sheet, and a few of them don't apply each time. So then in that case, you would keep at the top of your, in your quick lookup information, what kind of hire this person was.
Good. What about price?
Price. So perhaps the price that someone pays changes the tasks that you do. For example, if a $100 a month subscription means you don't turn on the phone support for a help desk, in that case, you want to have the price in the header data, or maybe the service level. That would be another way of describing it. So you quickly know which tasks need to be done.
Yeah, good.
When was the last time you looked at your resume? Last time you changed jobs? Last time your boss annoyed you enough that you thought about changing jobs? 10 years ago? 20 years ago? Whatever the rest of 2020 brings, we can tell you one thing. You won't have your resume ready when you need it. No one ever does. The best time to work on your resume is now, when you don't need it. When you have enough time to go through your email and your calendar and remember all your successes. When you have time to find all those annoying typos. Start now with the resume workbook. An up-to-date resume is something a professional always has ready, because you never know when opportunity will knock, and it might be disguised as a layoff. Go to the website, look for products in the navigation bar, and you'll find resume workbook in the dropdown.
Okay, now we're going to talk about what I think could easily be missed, but is behind the scenes maybe the most important sell in each project. I think all the other stuff is necessary, but this one is priceless.
Yes. Without this, you have nothing.
Yeah, you have nothing. Yes.
So this is the deadline, and this is the last piece of header data. So at the bottom of the other pieces of information, you put the deadline. And that's the deadline of the overall project, and it drives the rest of the spreadsheet. So in a minute, we're going to set up the tasks, and each task will have a deadline of its own, and that deadline is driven by the overall deadline. And if you change the deadline, the overall deadline, all the due dates for all of your tasks change too. And the point of having a deadline is deadlines drive behavior. And so if you actually get the task, want to actually get the task done, you need deadlines and due dates. And the other thing it does is it allows you to do the calculations to tell you whether you're red, amber, or green on a whole, on an individual task or the whole project.
Yeah, and let me give you an example of how flexible what we learned over time was. The deadline, for instance, for us presenting, say, an effective manager conference in Silicon Valley or in London or in Berlin, I think it's important to recognize that it would be easy to say the date that something is going to happen on, hypothetically, like turning on a new customer account or something, or giving them access to something, would be the deadline. But that doesn't have to be so. The deadline can be independent of that. You might assume at the Silicon Valley conference that, okay, the deadline is the date that we're going to present that effective manager conference. It doesn't have to be. I think at one point we assumed that, and then we realized, no, the deadline should be the day before. And you might say, well, wait, okay, the deadline, that's when the project ends. No, not at all. In fact, in virtually all of our usages, all of our different projects, there are tasks that are due before the deadline, and there are tasks that are due after the deadline. So this is more of a global deadline, and you could have it on the day of. You could even have it the day after, so that the actual event you were planning for would happen on minus one relative to things. Now it's probably simpler just to make the deadline of the actual thing, the ending, be zero. But you don't have to. And what's more, you don't have to assume that at day zero, tasks stop. In fact, we have tasks that are due 30, 60, 90 days after a conference that we have to follow up on. Has the hotel billed us for their stuff? Hotels are notoriously bad at billing. Those kinds of things, the ability to move the deadline and to have tasks both before, which is what most people think of as a project, and after, which makes no sense in terms of the classic project management thinking, make this a great deal more flexible than we realized it was when we first started creating it.
Right. And you can build up from a date. So if you made a sale and then you have customer onboarding tasks after a sale, then the deadline is the day the sale was made, but then all of your tasks build up after that. Or you can have building up towards like a deadline, a release date, for example.
Yeah. So in that example of onboarding or provisioning a customer order, you could have the deadline be the date of the sale and all of the dates would be plus dates. Mm-hmm. As opposed to sitting there going, well, what's the deadline for this project? I don't know. I guess I can't use this piece of software because, you know, it's not really 60 days because we have stuff to do 90 days after, but gosh, the majority of the tasks are in the first 30 days. Should I make the deadline 30 days? And don't worry about that. The deadline is whatever you choose it to be, and there'll be tasks either due so many days before, which are minuses, or tasks that are due after, which are pluses.
So we'll get to that. We're going to talk about offsets and due dates in a little bit when we get to the tasks. But the last thing, once we've got the header data in to do, is freeze the data. And if you use spreadsheets all the time and you know how to freeze pane or freeze window, like you're going to learn nothing in the next 3 minutes. And if you don't know what that means, you're about to have a revelation.
Yes.
So if you imagine our spreadsheet with 100 tasks, and say we're looking at column AT, that's the Silicon Valley in November. If you start to scroll down the page to see the later tasks, the header data that tells me which column is which project is which disappears. Off the top of the spreadsheet. And now I get to line 90 and I'm thinking, now was it AT or AS? Like, which column was it? And I can't remember. So what you do is you highlight the rows that are important, that you always want to see that header data information, and you freeze them. And that way they always stay there and the scrolling doesn't make them go away.
Yes. So how do you do that?
So on a Excel, you highlight them and then you go to window freeze panes. And if you're on Google Sheets, it's under view freeze. And you can freeze any number of rows and columns.
So we're suggesting that for that header data, the identification and the quick lookup and the deadline, those will be frozen. The first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rows.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at if you see the image, there's some blue, sort of slightly thicker blue lines. That's Google Sheets indicating which lines are the ones above and to the left are frozen. On the image.
You're saying that the rows to the left, so A, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta, because of that thicker line between Delta and Echo, are frozen in our example. And rows 1, 2, 3, and 4 being above the thicker line, those rows are frozen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Good. Okay, good. So now if I were somewhere in the green stuff, which if you haven't looked at the image yet, when you do, you'll understand what I mean, and I were to scroll, I would be scrolling in and among the green, and the top four rows and the four left columns will not move. Those are kind of like GPS coordinates. We need to know those all the time. Good.
Exactly.
Yeah, good.
Okay, so now we can identify our projects. Now we're going to set up the task data. And so we've already described some of the first few tasks that we're entering that header data. But if you know that, if you've been listening to us for any length of time, you know that enter location is not a task, or it's not sufficient for an effective project task, because we're missing who and when.
Okay, good.
So if you don't have a person responsible for a task, it won't get done. And if you don't have a due date or a deadline, that also doesn't get done. That's human nature. So we're going to add that information into the sheet.
And what you're saying is the task in our mind is what is done, but it also includes who does it. And I assume we're going to talk at some point about when it's due.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what we're describing is the content of the first four columns before you get to projects. And the first column will contain a task number, which is not part of the management of a project. That's just going to make it easier. We're going to describe that in a second. The next one is the offset, which helps us calculate the due dates. That's the when part of who does what when. And then the next column is who, as in one person responsible. And then we've got the actual description of the task, like review hot watch notes for previous properties. That's a task to be carried out. So we're going to start with the task descriptions and work left, which sounds a bit confusing, but it's easier if you know what the tasks are first.
Yeah, as you're talking, I'm looking at the example image we've shared with everyone, again, not just licensees. If you're a licensee, of course, the great part about this cast is you can download the probably 20, 25 page detailed description show notes, and you don't have to listen to my voice drone on again. But I think it's interesting in case people are wondering how robust this software or this concept using spreadsheet technology is. The first task on our public conference list of tasks in a project, the offset is minus 240, which is what, 8 months?
Yeah, eight months before the deadline.
Before the deadline is when we start tracking green, amber, red. In case you were wondering how big you could make this, this is, you know, it's bigger than a bread box, but smaller than an 18-wheel vehicle. But it's not smaller necessarily than a BMW Mini or a Mini Cooper.
So in column D, we're going to write what, and then we're going to work down our list of tasks. And all you're doing to begin with is just pulling from memory or a list or anywhere else that you keep something, the list of tasks. Don't worry about when they're due or who's going to do them. Just describe each task. And it doesn't matter, as you said earlier, it doesn't matter if you get it wrong first time around, you forget something or you put them in the wrong order. It doesn't matter. We're almost doing a brain dump of just like what goes into this project. One per line going down in column D. And when you're writing them, what you write is important. So the task must be specific, start with a verb. It has to be able to exist in a done or not done state, otherwise you can't make it into a task, and it mustn't contain an and. So we're going to talk about those four things so that we get the tasks right, because if you get the task wrong, nothing works later because you don't know what you're supposed to be doing. So the first thing is, make your task specific. So for example, we have add dates to the manager tools delivery calendar. It's not just any calendar, it's the delivery calendar. It's a specific calendar that we all have available for the whole team, and it tracks just this kind of information when we're delivering things.
Yeah, I find it interesting that you point out that it's specific to that calendar, because what stands out about that task to me is anybody who was working in what we now call Cypress, delivering client or public conferences, would have said, of course, the moment we set one up, we've got to add it to the calendar. Because at that time, people were in their calendars every day, 500 times a day. If you're like me, what am I doing? What am I supposed to be doing? What's next? And so on. And maybe what's next is in my head a lot. But what's interesting is, they might have said, well, of course, everyone knows that, and then not made that a task. There is almost no task too small. And I will tell you, we disagree with these ideas of 5 and 7 day long tasks, because for all kinds of project management reasons. But the smaller the task, yes, there are more tasks to keep track of, but you then will learn, if you're the one observing the status of work in a particular project by looking at the green, amber, red colors in the spreadsheet that will tell you how to create, you will have greater confidence that things are done, assuming you trust that what your people telling you are accurate and they're actually updating things appropriately. They're not making things greens that aren't. They're not unnecessarily or perhaps unethically avoiding putting something in red status, not that they have to put it in red. Either it's done or it's not done. But you want more specificity rather than more generality, because the more general your tasks are, the longer they are, the more you're behind the moment you find out you're behind. If you're only putting in 5 to 7 day tasks, the moment one turns red, you're 5 to 7 days behind on that project. If it's a 6 week project, that's a lot. So we are very granular about our tasks. That one always stands out to me as a really good example of a very granular task.
So other examples of being specific: be specific about what a report needs to include or which form to use, about who an email is sent to.
Yes, who to send it to.
Whose approval you need. Numbers like how many of that thing should you pack, or how long something takes. So for every entry you make, look at it again and say, could someone read this and do the task differently to the way I want it done, but still be following what it says in this task, even if it's yourself.
Yeah, part of the beauty of that is we want this information, which used to be in your head, now to be publicly available. But of course, in your head, this information, the order of tasks and rough idea of when things are due, was combined with the quality of the task. We want to break those up so that other people can do the task, but because they haven't done it before, perhaps, I mean, many hands make light work, but not if they don't know the quality required. And so there's nothing wrong with putting specifics in there. We want the ability to have someone else take over. And we've done this several times at ManagerJoules. As our organization continues to grow, perhaps we're not, we can't hire somebody for 90 days for whatever reason. We can't put the interviews together in time, and we need someone else. We've promoted somebody. We need someone else to take over some tasks. We can assign them this, and they know very specifically what to do. Yeah, could someone read this and do the task differently? I call this, and I'm sure some of you, those of you in the manufacturing world have heard this, pokey yoke. Mm-hmm. I want to make a task such that somebody, if they've done it, but if they follow the instructions, it's done right, or they know it's done wrong, so that you don't end up with a whole bunch of things who appear to be green when in fact have not been done to the standard you need.
Right. And it's good practice, even if you're only writing it for yourself.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Next thing is start your tasks with a verb, a doing word. So a task by definition has to be something you're going to do, even if it's think about. But it's really easy to write tasks without verbs in them for some reason. So examples would be send, add, confirm, upload, enter, write, estimate, calculate. What is it that you want to see?
Transfer, secure, populate, review. I'm just reading right off of our task. Publish, add, review, research. Now, research actually is not a good one.
No.
Because a person could do the research, know what the research is, but not post the research.
Well, they could research but not get the right information. So you might want to have research this and populate this template with the information I want.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't say research and populate.
Oh, no,
you would say populate.
Yes.
Because the research has to be done in order to be populated.
See, as you do it, as you say it out loud and you refine it.
And that brings up a good point. Most people would put down research. That's what I want. And you're right. But actually, you don't want the research to be done. You want to know what the research says.
Yes.
That's why one of my all-time favorite casts that no one gives any love to in the world is the one about combining both the task and the reporting of the task so that you now have a deliverable. We want to be reporting in deliverables, not just in tasks. Okay. Good. All right. Let's keep going.
So the next thing to think about your task is it has to be able to exist in a done or not done state. And this is kind of the same thing as being specific and breaking tasks down and kind of different. So if you can report a task as partially done, you probably haven't broken it down enough. So let's say part of your project means writing a report. If the task says write weekly status report using template B1, you're all right. It's specific. It starts with a verb. But if I come to your desk and I can say, hey, have you done that report? And you can say almost or nearly, or I've done some of it, then it probably isn't broken down. And if it can exist in a partially done state, how do you report it? So do you say, I've started it, so I'm going to say it's done, or I've finished it, so I'm going to go overdue because I haven't finished it, but I've started it. It just becomes much more confusing. So instead, you just break it down until it can exist in a done or not done state.
This is also good in terms of done and not done. Don't ask someone, don't make the task writing. Make them post their writing.
Yes.
Because if somebody says they're done, but it's not posted, first of all, it's of no use to anybody else, and you don't get to verify it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's done. I'll post it. No, it's not. Look, no offense. People aren't trying to be unethical. People are just busy. And so, yeah, say, hey, look, you can write it whenever you want. What I'm measuring is whether or not you've posted it.
All right. So here's some examples. Write the intro section of the weekly status report using the template B1.
Now, by the way, Woody, you're not suggesting that if the status report is one page, 500 words, You're not suggesting breaking that down, right?
No, because I would almost say that can't exist in an almost state. Like if it's one paragraph, you've
well, no. 500 words is more than one paragraph, and depending upon how good a writer you are, I suppose.
Yeah.
But if it's 5 pages, a weekly status report, then yeah, you could break it down and you could post it bit by bit. Do not ask people to write 3 sections and then post the totality, because all that does, without shining a light on it, increases the chances that people are going to misreport, whether they intend to or not.
And the next one we've kind of covered a couple of times, but don't use and. If you have and in a task, again, it probably needs breaking it down. So, you know, things that we've talked about already, like enter location data, is super easy. It's tiny. And we could have changed it to enter location data and customer name and company, right? They're 3 very small pieces. We probably get them all at the same time. But it's possible that you would get the customer name but not and know that they have 50 locations and not know which location your project was going to happen at. You know, maybe you start filling it in and then you realize I don't have the other piece of data, but now the task is marked done or not done and it's half done again, which is, you know, it just makes it more difficult. You know, maybe you get information that says it's Peter Bridges and Son, but it doesn't tell you whether it's an LP or an LLP, and that makes a difference to you. What you want is a separate row for that task so that you can leave that task in the undone state, even though you have some of that other information.
Good. Okay.
We've talked about the way, the creation of tasks, the way to write tasks to make them efficient. Now we're going to talk about multiple tasks or reminder tasks. So times where you put the same task in multiple times at different parts of the project. And there's a really good reason for doing this sometimes. So, for example, anytime you need information from someone else, you want 2 tasks. You want a task to ask for the information and then another task to check that you've received it. Because if the task is ask for the information and you mark it done, and then that person doesn't respond, now you've broken again. You don't know that.
Right. So, but then you might say, everybody listening going, well, okay, that's fine. You're right. We shouldn't be asking people to ask for things. That leaves an undone, a loose end out there. So you say, but okay, look, I am smart. I don't tell people, I don't monitor whether or not they've asked. I monitor whether or not they've gotten it. Yes, you're right. Except that all relationships are not perfect. All relationships don't automatically result in a person doing what they're supposed to be doing. If you take human behavior into account, you realize pretty quickly that what actually happens here is if you only measure whether or not they've gotten it, it would appear, and there's a case to be made for this, that they didn't do their job. Well, okay, that's true, particularly since we have a podcast called Owning the Inputs. But in order to reduce the chance that you're adjudicating arguments between your people, you can say to them, I'm going to measure both that it was asked for and that it was returned. This is particularly important if it's been asked for and the recipient of the ask is external to the organization. That may require some escalation internally in order to get that particular task done. So track both the asking and the receiving.
And even if it's just you using it, sometimes you get to a task and you're like, oh, I need that piece of information.
Yep,
and
that's a great
point. Did I even ask for it? Did I send that email? Is it still in my drafts? And you don't want to have to go look for it in your email if you have something that says done. It's easy. And then any task that needs to be done more than once, enter it more than once. So, for example, if your project means sending a status email each week, put that on the list at 7-day intervals multiple times through your projects. Because the whole point of this is to reduce the amount of brain power you're using to track tasks and use it for more creative, more things that are of more value. And remembering to send that report takes brain power. And you could have it on your calendar, you can have another system, but why wouldn't you want it all in one place?
Yeah, I mean, here's an example from Cypress, Arcast. We have a task to update what we call the logs or logistics block, which is an item that exists on the Manager Tools delivery calendar, a Google shared calendar, on the first day of a presentation. It is a piece of information, an appointment on the calendar that says things like, where are you supposed to meet the client? What is their cell phone number? What have we shipped? And are you carrying anything? How far is it to the event? Is it 5 miles or 1 mile? So you can decide when you get your Uber. This is all information we know that is then made available to the presenter. And it's put in the calendar, folks, because you can't have it in the cloud only on the Google spreadsheet that we're talking about here, the Google Doc or Google Sheet, I guess, because there are many times where presenters don't have access to a cell signal, either because of where they are, or they're out in the country, or maybe they're in a large building and it's poorly shielded unless you're on the client's Wi-Fi. Or I shouldn't say poorly shielded, but it shields you from cell signals unless you're on the Wi-Fi, and you're not going to be on the Wi-Fi in the first half hour you're there, if at all. But if you put it on the calendar, calendars update frequently, usually with push notifications. So that logs block needs to be updated regularly. In fact, we have a task to update the logs block 3 or 4 times over the course of 6 months. And the reason for that is there are other times when presenters are traveling and they're thinking about their next 3 weeks worth of travel, and they want to know where they're going and what they're doing and who they're meeting, or maybe just they know the logs block is where they would find the cell phone number of the sponsor to call them at 10 o'clock at night or to text them at 10 o'clock at night when maybe most everybody else at Manator Tools has gone to bed, but Mike and I, and they can text the person on their own rather than having to go into the cloud to find that person's number that they've shared with us, but they can't get to the cloud, and that they can still send a text message. And it is that updating that regularly with information that goes into the logs block as we get it, the difference between the mailing address and the shipping address and the office number and the actual room number, all that stuff comes in over time. You can't just tell people it's an Apple corporate headquarters. I mean, no offense, but it used to be funny. Now it's hilarious, right? You can't even get into the darn place. And even if you got in, you wouldn't know where you were going. So the point is, there are several times in any given delivery that says update the logs block with this information or that information or that information. So that information is always available in an offline state because everyone here subscribes on their phones or on whatever calendar software they have to the MT, the Manator Tools delivered calendar.
Yeah, it's super important. And so it appears more than once.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So if you have tasks like this that are ongoing and then put the task in several times into your task list, that will be helpful.
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's really our guidance about tasks, or as I would have said, deliverables. But hey, who's
naming this stuff?
After 15 years, you'd think my own staff would listen. But anyway, okay, now let's talk about, let's move to our left, right? We're in column D, we've got the what's the task or deliverable. Now we're going to move to the left and we're going to assign it. So column C is who's supposed to be doing this.
Yeah, so we're going to go back to the top and we're going to start with the first task, and we're going to say we're going to put a name, one single person's name in each row. And it doesn't matter if it's first names or last names or initials, whatever you use to identify people in your company is fine. What's important is that it's just one person. If there's two or more, everybody will think that someone else is doing the task. It's just, that's the way thing. That's not a spreadsheet issue. That's a people issue. So just one person.
Okay, good. Column B, moving further to left now, is the when, okay? And these are task due dates. Is that right?
Yes. So this is probably the third most important column because there's the deadline, what you're going to do, and then this is the column that drives the due dates for the individual tasks.
But don't just assume, right, there's some logic here that we have to make clear.
Right, exactly. So if you were only doing one project and you only had 20 tasks, you could put in the due dates for each individual tasks manually. But we're talking about projects with more tasks than that and potentially multiple projects.
Yeah, okay. But okay, let's go back. Okay, you say when you're only dealing with one project, you mean if you weren't using the spreadsheet.
Right.
Yeah. So folks, if you only have 20 tasks and you want to practice, I think you practicing on a 20 task recurring project would be a great solution. I think the point that Wendy is making is the real power of the spreadsheet starts to multiply when you have multiple similar projects, say a monthly closeout report that has 25 steps or whatever, and the deadline is known each month. And the moment it's known, then the deadline for all the tasks, based on your knowledge of those tasks and the order they occur in, automatically can be populated. You're suggesting, Wendy, that if you weren't using this, you have a rough idea. If you were making a task list, you could probably handwrite the deadlines there and keep track of them on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Good. So what we're going to do to calculate the due dates is use an offset. So we'll try and explain that first. So for each task, when it's going to be done is a combination of the deadline date and the number of days that the task is offset from that date. So let me give you a simple example. If I was going to send Christmas cards in time for Christmas, we know what the deadline is. It's the 25th of December. That's when Christmas is every year.
Yeah, that's actually, but then you got to think, that's not the deadline. I don't think the mail delivers on Christmas.
It doesn't?
No. I don't think it delivers on Christmas Eve.
For my simple example, the mail is now delivering on Christmas Day. But for the cards to get to their destination on time, we need to send them 10 days before the deadline, for example. And so the task due date is the 15th of December. It's 25 minus 10. And you can describe that differently as an offset, that the task due date is offset from the deadline by minus 10 days. So minus 10 days before the deadline is when the task due date is due. And so that's what we're going to tell the spreadsheet to do.
I can't believe you described that correctly. Folks, if you don't know, Wendy describes her least favorite and least effective task on the planet as maths.
Hopeless. So what we're going to say is the overall deadline, which we put in when we were putting the header data, and then we are in this when column, we're going to put in the offset for when this particular task on each row. So in column C, so you'll look at the task, we've got task, email the RFP and room diagram to the hotel requesting a proposal, needs to be done 196 days before the deadline. So in column C, we have minus 196.
Yes.
So tasks, we said, can happen before a deadline or after a deadline. So the offset can be a negative number or a positive number. So negative numbers produce dates before the deadline. So like in our example, minus 196 is 196 days before the deadline. And positive numbers produce due dates after the deadline. So plus 10 would be 10 days after the deadline.
Right.
So if you've got a project where you're working towards a deadline, so for example, a software release that has to go out on a certain date, your tasks are happening, most of your tasks are probably happening before the deadline. So they'll all be negative numbers. And for projects like onboarding customers after a sale, the majority of the tasks will take place after the deadline. So they're all positive numbers. And you'll probably have a few of each, but the majority seem to go before or after.
And it's critical that for each row, if there's a task, then you've got to have an offset number relative to the deadline. And as a general rule, top to bottom, if you don't know exactly where something goes, but you kind of know it goes between two other tasks and you have a rough idea of when those tasks are due, then you could probably just split the difference. And then after you've done this thing two or three times, you can realize where the pinch points are in your project and make an adjustment. And you might say, well, that old version where I had it off by a couple of days, that was wrong. It actually wasn't wrong. It was incredibly helpful. If your standard is precision, and you're trying to measure human behavior, you're always going to be disappointed. On the other hand, if your standard is improving delivery of the thing the project is measuring, and you spend less and less time stressing, you spend more and more time knowing what's supposed to be done rather than feeling that you're behind, and that feeling of being behind doesn't produce work. It produces the opposite of serotonin, which probably reduces your workload ability. You know, if you're thinking that you're going to improve the delivery of, the efficiency of, and the ability to share with other people so you could delegate to other people, now you're talking. That's the way to think.
And the other thing when you're doing this, it's fine to guess. You won't get it right first time anyway. And the other thing is, don't try and work out an offset that gives you a due date of the week you're working. So if you're thinking, oh, my deadlines are always Friday, so I can't have a task that's minus six because that would be a Sunday and I don't work Sunday. Don't try and do that. Just
don't do it. Yeah.
It's just too confusing.
Yeah. And recognize that that if you're a Monday to Friday worker, as so many of us are, you'll have to be aware of when stuff is due. And maybe you decide that if stuff is due on Saturday, you'll just decide if it's due on Saturday, then that will show up as red on Monday. Mm-hmm. And you can either do it on Friday and make it green in advance. Wouldn't that be a great concept? Yeah. Or you can forgive yourself on Monday that you have a couple of tasks that are red. It's just not that big a deal. Is that a good point to wrap up for now, Wendy?
I just want to do one more column. The A column, and this one's really easy. So
okay, good.
The offset column is hard, but the last one is the column A, and we're just going to put a task number on that. And basically, all we're going to do is start in row one and type one, and row two is two, and so on.
No, that's not true. You just said we're going to start in row one and type in one. We're not going to need to do that because they're row numbers.
They're row numbers.
Yeah. We're going to start with the first task that happens below the header data, the identification, the quick look, information and the deadline. That may take four rows, it may take six rows, it may take two rows for you, depending upon your project. But the first row that has a deliverable or a task in it will, in column A, have a task number of one. And what you're telling us is we don't have to enter those, right? We can just use the simple dragging function.
Dragging, exactly. Yeah. You do one, two, and then you drag, and it knows what the rest
now,
is.
Now, tell me something, though. I want to know why. Because, look, I actually don't like this as a general rule when I deal with spreadsheets, because you've heard me do it 100 times. Dude, I just looked at task 25, and it's not task 25. And they say, yeah, it is. And they say, oh, wait, I'm sorry, I'm in row 25. Well, that's task 29. So what is the value rather than just knowing that? Right, because you could call it task four if you wanted, or task five. What's our logic there?
What happens when you start making changes is it gets very confusing very quickly if you don't have something that identifies the task numbers. For example, if you're sharing with someone else and someone says, row five, that task, I did it yesterday.
Yeah.
And sometime in between that person looking at the spreadsheet,
you've changed the header data.
You've taken out a row for some reason. Now you don't know whether they're talking about five as you see it or five as they saw it an hour. It just gets really confusing. You can hide this column the majority of the time, but in the times when you want to update or make changes to your spreadsheet, it's super useful. So now we've given everybody everything they need to start doing the hard work of the spreadsheet, and then we can save the math part next time.
Can I mention one other thing, though? So we talked about the row data, and we had the what, and we had the who. You have to assign it to somebody, and then we had the offset, and then we had the task number. You mentioned that task number can be hidden. I would argue that the offset can frequently be hidden as well.
That's true.
And the reason why, you can't hide the who, but the reason why you can cover up the offset or hide it is because in each individual cell that tracks a particular project and a particular deliverable, that cell is going to have a due date in it, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be written in the task cell. The task for the Ottawa conference that's about reviewing the room schematic. If I look for that task on that particular Ottawa project, when I match up that row task and that column, the project that it is being applied to, in that cell, whatever cell it is, there'll be a deadline. There'll be a date written by the software, by the logic we're going to teach you in the final version, the final part, I think, right? Will we finish?
Yep.
The final part of this cast. And we will either be loved or hated.
I hope it's loved because I love Cyprus.
Yeah, so do I. Cyprus is like a warm blanket, guys. When you've got 10, 20,000 tasks that your organization has to do and they're known, separate from all the other stuff we do around here, which is not trivial. We're not even talking about Spyglass, which is a similar piece of software that has to do with podcast production. Every single podcast we produce is using a similar piece of software, a Google Doc, a Google spreadsheet for podcast production, like Cyprus. And a tip of the hat to those of you who figure out that one of our new projects is about creating our own internal disk test instrument. And that project is called Prestwick. And see if you can figure out what the theme is.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Wendy, thank you. And until next week, then. That's it, everybody. Come back next week for the final installment. We're sorry this is so long and so detailed, but I can assure you it is a key part in how we deliver what we do, and we rely on Cyprus.